We have until noon to have everybody that has something to say to be heard, and I think we're going to have to ration the time very much the way it is. It's my intention to have this as an informational hearing only, and we want to hear everybody's point of view, and then we will have the bill heard at another date when we have a little more organization of this place. And with that, we'll start out with a statement by me. It's a pleasure to have this bill before this committee, and it's a pleasure to be the author of this bill. The bill means a lot to me, and the biggest point is it establishes the Minnesota Future Fund. For years, ever since I've been elected to this body, the amount of money has slowly been eroded for economic development to the point right now that if we had streetlights in the borders of our state, they would all be bright red coming in and bright green going out, because we have no ammunition to compete with our neighboring states. And unfortunately, that's exactly what we have to do, compete with our neighboring states to get jobs and industry into the state, which is the number one thing I heard knocking on doors when I ran for office this last time and the time before. So we established in this bill what we call the Minnesota Future Fund. And the Minnesota Future Fund comes up with about $135 million conservatively per biennium to create jobs with. Unfortunately, we have to bid with other states, bid against other states. Iowa just passed a $55 million bill to continue to try to steal Minnesota businesses. South Dakota, they have a lot of advantages to get Marshall's businesses. So we have Wisconsin as the state that's getting most of Minnesota's businesses now. They have 48 job incentive programs. We have 12. And ours are getting weaker, not stronger. So, the thing that made me excited about this is we established this fund so we can use $74 million for job retention and creation. Growing next generation businesses, $34 million. Providing foundations for growth, $14 million. And partnership investments, $13 million. It's a conservatively $135 million. We are now giving ammunition to the economic developers throughout our state. Without this bill, we will be in the same shape we have been in and continue the same trend. So that's why I'm excited about this bill. That's why I'm the author of this bill. So with that, I would like to have the Racino part talked about first, and have opening remarks from Representative Biskins and Hackbarth, saying why, what are the merits of having a Racino in Minnesota, and why we could use one. With that, I don't know which one of you, Representative Hackbarth, will start. Thank you. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I need to clarify a little bit. We're still in the Environment Committee, and they may call me for a vote at any moment, so that's why I'm first, Representative Gunther. And
that's another reason we're having an informational hearing, Representative Hackbarth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, as you all know, I've been a longtime supporter of Racino, along with Representative Biskins. We've been working on this a number of years. I think it's very, very important to the state of Minnesota that we do this for a number of different reasons. The Native Americans have done a very, very good job with what they have done in the state of Minnesota with their casinos. They've done a great job supporting their people. Many, many programs that they've started, and they've done very, very good. Very, very good work for their people. And this is not about trying to be mean or take business away from tribal casinos or anything like that. That's not what this is about. Not at all. This is about Racino and keeping Canterbury Park and Running Aces viable businesses in the state of Minnesota. Folks, these two very, very lucrative businesses are going to go away because they cannot afford to pay the purses to the winners of the races like other states can. I have a cousin of mine that is a horse owner in the state of Minnesota, and he moved outstate to another state where they can pay better purses. And they loved Canterbury. They wanted to be at Canterbury. They wanted to stay there, but they had no other alternative than to leave. And if we don't do something in the state of Minnesota, that's going to happen more and more, and this industry is going to go away. A few years ago, we did the card club for racetracks at Canterbury and consequently at Running Aces, and that helped. But now we're at a point where that's not enough, and we need to do something to save this industry in the state of Minnesota. Not just the horse racing industry, but ag industry, and everything connected with it. And that's why I'm supporting this bill, and I'd be here for any additional questions, Mr. Chairman.
Appreciate that. Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. It is an honor to be here before the committee, and I want to thank the chairman for allowing me to testify before this committee, having been the chief author of Racino for most of my 13 years now here in the legislature. Representative Gunther, it is most appropriate that this bill does start before your committee, because every year that I have moved this bill, it has, the message has been and continues to be that this is a bill related to jobs in the state of Minnesota. And I'm not simply talking about the construction jobs, which would be necessary to build the Racinos. And in fact, was the reason why the last time I carried this, we had a letter of support from our labor unions for this project. It's not only about the jobs that would be created at the casinos themselves, which would be numerous and ongoing, but it's also about jobs throughout this the state of Minnesota. Members, we have the University of Minnesota a few years back did an analysis of the equine industry to the state of Minnesota, what it means to the state of Minnesota. And the number that they had back then, and this was about 5 years ago, 6 years ago, was that this is $1 billion a year business. And believe it or not, a business that ebbs and flows with the success of racetracks. Now we're talking about farmers who grow the feed and alfalfa for the horses. We're talking about breeders. We're talking about horse owners. We're talking about veterinarians. We're talking about people who make the saddles and the equipment that go with owning a horse. This is a big industry in the state of Minnesota, and it's an industry that ebbs and flows with the success of the racetracks. And as the racetracks disappear, you're going to see this industry hurt as well. This is about jobs. It is about the economy, and that is why I am pushing this bill. Now, today you're going to hear a lot of boogeymen, a lot of maybes, what-ifs, and the concerns. I think when Representative Hackbar said this isn't about taking business from one sector and moving it to another, that's absolutely correct. In fact, members, if you saw just 2 weeks ago, 1,000 people out on the Capitol lawn, all right, who were saying if you pass a Racino, you're going to take our jobs. Okay, if you really, really believe that, then you can't honestly believe that this is an expansion of gambling. Because, of course, logically, if you're expanding something, you actually have more jobs, not less. So let's make sure that we have logic when we talk about this. You'll hear about expansion of gambling and its evils. Well, I'll come back again to the expansion of gambling. Folks, how many people here honestly believe that there's a Minnesotan who is not gambling, who wants to gamble? The number one place where people gamble, believe it or not, is not at one of the 18 casinos. It's not at your bars, which have your pull tabs. It's not at your convenience store. All right? The number one place where people gamble is right there on the computer. Folks, adding a casino to two facilities which were built for gambling, which have gambling on horses, which have card playing, to add one more option to the people who go there and call that an expansion of gambling is comparable to saying that if your wine and spirits allows Anheuser-Busch to introduce a new beer, we're going to expand alcoholism in the state of Minnesota. It's illogical. It's illogical. People who want to gamble are gambling. You're going to hear about the decadence that gambling brings, all right, to whatever area where it's located. Well, folks, I can tell you flat out that the area where I represent, the area where this new casino would be bringing in all of this decadent behavior, right, has letters of support from the locally elected government officials, both in the city and the county, saying, we know that this isn't true. We know this is a big, bad boogeyman that doesn't exist. Right? And they support the Racino legislation, so don't let that fool you. You'll hear about how gambling destroys our economy. Well, now I sit and I scratch my chin on that one, right? Because I realize that the state of Minnesota has been around for, what, 150, 153 years, and for most of that time, as the state of Minnesota went from nothing to where it is today, it was economically growing. And while it was economically growing, we had no laws prohibiting gambling. And my grandfather used to tell me about going to the bar in Shakopee when there was slot machines in the bars. And yet the state grew economically. So we can have all these theories, but the proof is in the pudding. And logically, it doesn't hold water that we have all of these economic dangers. Logically, it doesn't hold water that everyone who gambles is going to turn into a vagrant on some street corner. Harvard Medical School has done a study. Less than 3% of the population are susceptible to problem gambling. Gamblers Anonymous, not a group that would be real enthusiastic about gambling, puts the number right at about the same level. So we say, you know, this is evil and this is horrible and people are going to go to pot. Well, you're going to hear stories about people who have. All right, I give you that. There's still 3 out of every 100 that are susceptible and have problems. But what you don't hear is the stories of a lady I knew, wonderful woman. Right? My mother, who passed away 3 years ago, who one of her favorite things in the world her last 5 years was to grab her brother-in-law, go over to Mystic Lake, and have a Saturday afternoon of fun. 97% of the people who gamble have fun. And I don't know why we'd be against fun. Right. Members, this is a good bill. It's a bill about jobs and economic development. Mr. Chairman, thank you for the opportunity to be here. And I know I probably overstayed my 5 minutes or whatever you're offering. And there's a few other folks, I suppose, that want to speak to this.
I think there are. Thank you. Representative House has a question.
Mr. Chairman, I have a short comment and then a question. The fine gentleman up there testifying, first of all, mentioned helping the horse industry, and I'm pleased with that. That's fantastic. But, you know, a lot of us complain about the federal government helping General Motors and helping other entities and bailing things out. I don't think it's our job to bail out any industry. And that's bothers me a lot. But, Mr. Chairman, what concerns me most is, will you today be having maybe Deed or somebody I know the tribal folks will say they'll lose jobs. Representatives claim they'll create jobs, and I think both those statements have a great deal of truth to it. But overall, is this going to help the state of Minnesota, and can we find out from someone other than the pros and cons on gambling?
Yes, President Biskins, have you got a response?
Well, yes, absolutely. I don't know if there will be testifiers, Mr. Chair. That's in your purview, but I can get to the good representative for the University of Minnesota study, or at least a summary of that study that did point out the economic importance of the equine industry in the state.
Okay, very well. I do believe we have someone from Deed here, and we also have an economic developer from St. Paul here. I'd love to have them both come talk.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee.
Thank you very much.
And, Mr. Chairman, one other point that I wanted to make about the bill, and you may want to touch on it a little later, is the section in the bill that also has to do with gambling addiction and the money that's going to be going and set aside for that issue also.
We'll make sure that's brought up. Thank you. Please give your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Mark Loftus. I'm the Director of Business and Community Development at Deed. Thank you for the opportunity to answer the questions today about economic development. I need to say at the outset that, as you probably have all heard the discussion, the governor has publicly expressed a need for more funding for economic development, for job creation, and for education. I will be silent today as to the discussion about the source, and Deed will have to be neutral on the bill. I think the chairman would understand that. But as I've said in this committee before, in economic development and finance and tax committees and other places, as a department, and as I've testified on behalf of the State Economic Development Agency, we want to affirm that we are in a very, very strict competition for job creation in the United States, in North America, and around the world. Because Minnesota has many fundamental strengths, we don't always need to spend as much as other states. We don't need to spend more than other states in many cases. We do have a number of fundamental strengths, but we need the ability to compete for our businesses, for our state, and for our employees in ensuring that we retain and attract opportunities in business growth. Now, as we think about our mission here, just to remind you, we work with all sorts of companies. We have small businesses that we support. We work with medium-sized companies, manufacturers, and others. We work with Fortune 500 and Fortune 100 companies. And there's lots of reasons companies make the decisions that they do. They need access to customers. They have to have access to supply chain, suppliers that will support them. They need adequate infrastructure. They need quality workers. A quality workforce as well as a good supply of labor. They're concerned about the level of government-imposed costs. They need clear information to market opportunities. They have to have a regulatory environment that's both transparent and swift. They need access to intellectual capital, financial capital, and other things. It matters where the owners locate a business. Those are all for personal reasons. Those are all important factors. But if Minnesota is looking at how we can work with all of those companies who are, whether they're small or very large businesses, all of those factors, we also need to make sure that we focus on training of our workforce, that's existing and new workers, that we support entrepreneurial development, that we provide lending and financial capital for businesses and communities and in neighborhoods in the Twin Cities and elsewhere. We also need to support technology-based businesses. So, Mr. Chairman, those are my thoughts in answer to your question and Representative Howe's question about economic development.
Okay. Louis, you want
to... Good morning, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much.
What it's like from the field of economic development.
I will do my very best to do that, Mr. Chair. Thank you. My name is Louis Jamboy. I'm the President and CEO of the St. Paul Port Authority. I'm very happy to be here today. Thank you for inviting me. I'm going to be brief. But I'm going to talk about a couple of things. I'm going to talk about economic development tools, and I'm going to talk a little bit about the Regional Economic Development Organization and the relationship between those things. You know, recently both local and national news have carried articles about economic development programs and projects that haven't met their promise from either the expectations of the funding agency or the expectations of the businesses themselves. And I know, having been in this field for about 30 some years, as Minnesotans, we take particular pleasure in criticizing economic development tools, everything ranging from tax increment financing to Job Z. And while we as economic developers celebrate our successes, many others in our society spend a lot of time focusing on the failures of economic development. And the conclusion that's drawn by a lot of the detractors is that economic development tools simply don't work. That's an extremely unfortunate characterization, because it's just plain wrong. And while we're engaging in intramural debate about economic development tools, other states, regions, nations are employing those tools to recruit our businesses. That's our competition, and we have to compete with them as well. Many regions in this nation, including Austin, Dallas, Fort Worth, Charlotte, and others, have created economic development organizations that are engaged in branding, marketing, recruitment, and very high level retention. We've hosted national site selectors. Those folks whose job it is to find sites for large businesses for their next installation, to come to Minnesota and tell us what they think about this state and the Twin Cities area. And those folks have told us point blank that we're not on the radar screen. It's because we have not historically had a cohesive message about our strengths here. We haven't had a coherent organization that simply does branding, marketing, and recruitment, and we don't have the tools to go about attracting businesses. We're grateful for the Itasca Project in their leadership, because they have now created that branding, marketing, and recruitment organization, 70% privately financed and 30% publicly financed. And they're going to do a great job out and talking about the strengths, not only the strengths that Mark Loftus has talked about, but our highly educated workforce, our great K-12 and higher education institutions, our great cultural and arts facilities, the fact that we're home to Fortune 500 companies, and many other things. But we also know that they're going to need to talk about economic development tools, because that's the pitch that other regions, states, and nations make, and those economic development tools are often the deal closers. After all of the other positive things are identified, it's a tool that closes the deal to get a project done. A lot of the detractors will offer very simple solutions. We don't need economic development tools. We should eliminate them altogether. If we simply lower tax rates for all businesses, businesses will come naturally. I can tell you that it sounds good, but in hard to serve areas, that process simply won't work. In the city of St. Paul, where there are no vacant, uncontaminated sites to redevelop, if we didn't have tools like Deeds Contamination Cleanup Program and Deeds Redevelopment Program, we would have no redevelopment in the city of St. Paul. History shows us that we need those tools. Tools that are targeted at hard-to-serve areas make a big, big difference. We just finished two major projects on the east side of St. Paul, Baldinger Bakery and Health East Ambulance Service, and those business owners were very clear coming out and saying federal new market tax credits were the deal closer to make those deals happen. There's a couple hundred jobs in both those places, and millions in capital investment, and it's a revitalization activity on the east side of St. Paul that is extremely important. And again, it was an economic development tool and a series of them that got those deals done. Last summer, I was part of a team that went to Dearborn to try to keep Ford Ford Motor Company in St. Paul, 850 good jobs, a bunch of money spent in the neighborhood, in the community by Ford, and we went and took a state and city package to try to get that deal done. It didn't get done, but we came with a package in hand. It was a very small package compared to what the state of Michigan was offering, compared with what Indiana was offering, compared with what Kentucky was offering, but we felt we had to go. That's what we, that's our job. I'm just going to take one more second. We just heard that Lawson Software has been purchased by a company from Georgia. Now that Lawson Software is not a locally owned company, we know that there will be recruiters from all over the nation and perhaps all over the globe that are going to come after Lawson Software. See if they can move those jobs out of St. Paul to someplace else. We have to be able to respond. It's not, as Mark said, a theoretical exercise. This is real work that we have to do, and we need those tools to respond. So, one last thing. One of the primary themes coming out of the 2010 election cycle was jobs, jobs, jobs. I remember that from a few months ago. Jobs just don't happen. We have to compete for them. We have to work hard to make them happen. And it's the tools that Chairman Gunther is trying to create, along with the work that the Itasca Project and the Regional Economic Development Organization are going to pitch, that will help us create jobs in Minnesota. So we very much appreciate, Mr. Chair, your being a champion of economic development for a long time in this institution, and we very much appreciate you bringing this bill forward today. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Speaking of the wonderful things that are happening in East St. Paul, we have Representative Mahoney with some questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm going to ask a question, and then I've got a comment. Speaking of the East Side, Mr. Jamboy, the president of the Port Authority, is there any land that the Port Authority owns in the city of St. Paul that would be large enough for a racino? Maybe at the end of the Central Corridor's maintenance area down there.
Mr. Chair Representative Mahoney,
doesn't take many acres.
I don't think we have a site in St. Paul aside perhaps from the Ford property that could host a racino. Nothing on the east side I don't believe is large enough.
I'll take you on a tour.
That's enough, Mr.
Mr. Chair, I have two things that I would like to say, and there is a move afoot to actually ask the federal government to start putting restrictions on what states and cities and counties can spend, whether it's $5,000 or $25,000 per job, because many of the jobs cost in that range and to create. And I have not been a supporter of that at this particular time, but I'm getting closer and closer because some states are getting ridiculous. I don't. The rumor had the Ford dollar figure was way out of our reach, so I won't tell you what the rumor I heard, but I will say this: I do know what other states are spending a year, and I'm not sure what the rest of the committee knows. I know the chairman does know, but they are over $200 million a year. It's not uncommon for many states, and we are at the $20 million if we're there. We are getting hammered. And the chairman here, many of the members on this committee have championed economic development. And I'm not being partisan here because this has been a 12-year run. Multiple parties have been in charge, multiple parties in charge of the governor's office. We have, as the chair said, destroyed the ability of our economic development industry to bring jobs to the state of Minnesota. And until the leadership of this state not just two or a dozen people talk about it, we will never get back on track on that. We need to pump almost $150 to $200 million a year, and it is insane that we are trying to create jobs on the $20 million footprint.
Thank you. Thank you very much for... Representative Clark, do you have a question?
Mr. Chairman, for these witnesses.
Very well.
Thank you.
Love to have you ask it.
All right. So listening to you talk about tools was kind of a neutral term. What tool are you referring to? Can you give it a name?
Mr. Jamboy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Clark. The tools are the economic development programs that exist. Tax increment financing is a tool. The contamination cleanup program is a tool. The Minnesota Investment Fund is a tool. Those are the tools that I was talking about.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. But you did thank the Chairman for bringing forward this bill as if it is a tool. So what is the kind of tool that this puts on the table that's different from the ones that you just described? Does it have a name?
Again, Mr. Chair, Representative Clark. No, the tool, the bill provides a source of financing for the tools that are identified in the bill. There are several, and I don't have the bill in front of me right now, that are identified in.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I've read the
did I misunderstand? Summary,
and it tells us that we're talking about creating various funds, Minnesota Futures Fund.
Those are the tools represented.
You know, various. Okay, mm-hmm. But Mr. Chairman, what I'm talking about, I thought what you were referring to then is the source of funding for those tools. And what is your position on the source of funding, and can you name it? What is the source of funding? It's not taxes. What is it?
Well,
I just want to get that word on the table. I thought it was very clever not to ever hear the word mentioned, so I'm just wondering if you'd put it out there for us, or do I need to do it?
Well, thank you very much, Representative Clark. The St. Paul Port Authority is in lockstep with DEED about the neutrality of the Racino as a source of tools, but we are very passionate about the need for financing for tools. And as a result, I'm here to thank the chair and others for putting together a bill and for bringing the discussion forward about raising money for economic development. This bill may or may not fly. The approach may or may not be of interest to this body. But the importance of economic development brought me out today.
Mr. Chairman, maybe my question is then for the deed person. At least I heard you mention the word Racino. So if I could ask our economic development leader, Mr. Loftus, if you would name the source of the funding here. It's not what our governor has suggested when he was specifically talking about how we might put money into economic development. What source are we talking about here?
Mr. Loftus.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark. As I said, we are neutral as to sources here. What I've been testifying about today is what I've been testifying about for the last several months and actually many years through different committees and different governorships, that if we are going to be a competitive economy, we need to be able to assist entrepreneurs, be able to assist technology companies. We need to be able to assist locally based lending decisions in support of our economic growth. And so my statement and my position is that I am neutral as to the sources of how those purposes might be addressed.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Clark, I think the answer to your question is the source of the money that would help us create these economic development programs that would do that, what I mentioned with my opening statement, is the taxes that the two Class 1 racetracks would pay into the Minnesota Future Fund as a special revenue fund.
And Mr. Chairman, I guess if you want me to ask you, I could ask you. I just want someone to say the word that we're talking about here, the source of that revenue for taxes, then if you want to say that. What are we talking about? What kind of activity are we referring to?
This activity is called slot machines and a casino that will be within Canterbury Park and Running Aces, and the proceeds from that casino will pay for the purses for the horse industry. It will pay for the cost of the facility. It will pay for the Minnesota Future Fund, and it will also contribute more than that the state could use, like Governor Dayton mentioned on the Hauser show Sunday, that it could be used for things like ECFE programs and all day K. And those are the kind of things that I envision happening with the proceeds from the Minnesota Future Fund.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And I think I'll go back just to our head of the our head of this part of the department over there. When you run into a situation where you have the owners of one economic development tool vying with the owners of another economic development tool, and I guess I should just say the word, we're talking about gambling, right? That's the word that I haven't heard here. We're talking about the word racino. Racino is a form of gambling, gaming, whatever you want to call it. When you run into folks who are proposing to increase the economic development in our state, and you have two competing owners, which is what we basically have in this situation. How do you make a determination which one is more worthy?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, that's not my call. My call is not to make a choice. Elected officials make that choice. I'm here to say what economic development needs we have as a department that are irrespective of the decisions that you and the governor will make as to the future of, or whether there is a future with this activity.
Well, Mr. Chairman, let me ask the question differently. When you see that one ownership of an industry is harmed by proposals from other prospective owners of an industry, what do you do? What is your stance on that? You obviously make some recommendations, right?
Mr. Chair, Representative Clark, I make no recommendations about that. That's not my
okay.
position to make.
Maybe I'll ask it differently, Mr. Chairman. I'm getting just about done with this question, but maybe I'll ask you then. We don't have the fiscal note before us, so I can't see, you know, some of the details to the answer to the questions that I have, but I understand it's a very long fiscal note. I'm just being handed it. Okay, well, I'll have to take a little time to study it. But for now, let me just ask you, are you aware of damage that the existing proposal before us would cause to some of our economic developers in this state?
Mr. Chair, Representative Clark, I only know what I read in the newspaper and the public discussion about this subject in terms of the back and forth as to the effect on existing interests in the proposed new funding sources. I'm not in any stretch, would never pretend to be an expert or have any knowledge as to the impact on those sources, existing industries or the proposed industry, and how that would relate. Those are factors that you probably want to have testimony from the lottery commission or the gaming officials in the state. I'm an economic development professional. That's the stuff that I know about.
Mr. Chairman.
Your question was what, Representative
Clark? I'm trying to understand. I think I'm hearing you say there's been no analysis by your agency of either economic harm that might be caused by a new economic proposed ownership of a new ownership of an economic tool. Is that what I'm hearing? You have not analyzed that at all?
Mr. Chair, Representative Clark, that's correct.
Well, Mr. Chairman, do you intend to analyze that, or why wouldn't you analyze that? I would guess if we were trying to get, for example, you know, the Ford company or others here, and there was a, you know, one other industry was being harmed, you had a competing industry or ownership in the state, that you would want to know what the difference would be, because you would make some recommendation on that behalf.
Representative Clark, what he's trying to say is this is not a governor's initiative. So consequently, this governor is watching the people that work for him in the various departments very carefully, not to propose things that aren't his initiatives. And other governors have done this, maybe not quite to the extent that Governor Dayton is doing it. However, the reason they are not proposing things is because it wasn't a proposal by our governor. And that's what they were told not to do. And they're good employees.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
So don't ask them to be bad, please.
I'm not asking them to be bad. I'm asking to find out if who in our state government is doing the kind of analysis that I'm asking for. Then, do we have people? Maybe you're not the right person to ask. I don't want to put you in a bad spot. That's not my intention. I am trying to find out, though, who is helping us understand when one economic development tool is proposed, which seems to be the rationale for this bill, and it harms or greatly injures another economic development tool, or at least the owners of those two competing tools, who looks at that and gives us those numbers. And that's Do we have a state, somebody in the state agency that does can do that for us, or has done it?
Clark, I think Representative Mahoney has something to
go. Representative Clark, you know, you're correct to ask that question. I don't know, and maybe Mr. Loftus will tell us at the end of the day. But from the Forest Lake Times, and I don't have the date here, it looks like it was the middle of April, and I'm just going to read the paragraph. It's a quote of from Dick Day. Dick Day said, Racino supporters gradually came to agree that a Racino at Running Aces could indeed hurt the casino operations of Native American tribes to the north. Recent hearing at Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe tribal officials said the biggest threat to the band's casinos would be slot machines at Running Aces. It could impact their business by 40%. The biggest thing we heard when all the tribes that came in and when we analyzed it, I personally analyzed it, and I thought maybe they have something here, said Day, of Running Aces hurting the northern Indian tribes or game. So if the department or the state's not doing it, I guess one of the proponents is.
Okay. I'll let that question go at that then, and I'll have thank some other ones different. But
thank you,
Representative Mahoney.
Representative Moline.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for Mr. Loftus from Deed as well. I know that you're remaining neutral on sort of where the funds are coming from for economic development, but under the Minnesota Future Fund, let's just say that it is created and money is being put into it for economic development. Under the current language that's in this bill, are you comfortable that there are adequate protections that money can only be spent for economic development and not sort of diverted to, say, the general fund when there's a time of economic crisis or budget deficit?
Mr. Loftus.
Mr. Chair, Representative Meehan. Sorry. Having read the bill, I recognize that it does allocate funds for different purposes that are all, from my reading, related to economic development. There is a portion here that allocates funds for administrative support for these funds, mm-hmm. but I don't, just as a reader of the bill, I don't see any diversion to the general fund from these purposes.
Representative Mulry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a real quick point. Isn't it true, Mr. Loftus, unless we put it in the Constitution, any legislature, this one or a future one, can divert it?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think that's your call to decide how legislation directs funds, yes.
Representative Leidiger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I remember my economic high school classes, them stating that competition is a cornerstone of the free enterprise system. And I think that part of that discussion that we had here kind of missed that understanding of our free enterprise system. But what I really want to do is ask a question and get back to really the purpose is why that we have the economic development people here, which is to really give us a sense of what this bill, in terms of providing the tool to the economic development team, what that would do vis-a-vis the other states that are around us. I'd love to hear, I heard from Representative Mahoney kind of giving that dollar figure, the $200 million figure, but I wanted to really hear it from the economic development team. If you had to stack us up against the states that surround us, where do we fit currently?
Mr. Loftus.
Currently.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Leidiger, we have, and Representative Mahoney mentioned a number of $20 million a year. I have in my head for our division, just my part of the department, about $7 million a year that we spend on contamination cleanup, incentive grants and loans, gap financing loans with companies, administration of our business development programs. That is a pretty small number. It's a larger number when you start to add the training funds that are in other parts of our department. You might maybe double that in total over a course of a year in different ways. So you probably get closer to $20 million when you take all the state government funds together. But compared to other states, Iowa, for example, has somewhere north of $50 million allocated for economic development. The state of Ohio, I just saw an article last week that they have created a $1 billion plus fund for economic development. There's a county I'm aware of in the state of Florida that has a $25 million fund by itself that they've raised. So I give you those numbers, but I also want to say, remind you what I said earlier, that our role is not to match the same number that every other state has. Our role is to be as strategic as we possibly can, to be as smart about it as we can, and find ways, given the fact that Minnesota does have so many strengths. We have so many strengths in all those areas that I listed, that we don't have to outspend other places to be successful. A lot of times we work with companies who say, well, I could have gotten X million dollars from another state, but the state did what it could, and we know you don't have a lot to work with, but you did what you could. And we assemble a lot of resources from many places. A good example that this committee has heard about before is Sage Electrochromics down in Faribault. Between Deed and the city and the county and the utility and the regional McKnight Foundation group, we assembled a package of about $14 million in total. They could have gotten several times that from upstate New York, but they stayed in Minnesota because they're connected here, they have intellectual expertise here, and they have a foundation here. So I give you the comparative numbers for other states, knowing that we don't have to outspend other states, but we've got to do a better job with those projects when we are competing.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Yep. Next we have Dick Day. And up after him we have Jeremy Estenson.
Mr. Chairman and members, good to be with you. I'm Dick Day, president of Racino Now. And as we have on this committee and we have in the Senate, this is a bipartisan bill. We have Democrats and Republicans for our bill. We always have had. And I want you all to know, and you're looking, this is a 62 to 80% of Minnesotans say, why not a Racino? If there's anybody here that wants me to invite me to your district, I don't care if it's the Rotary or whatever, 80%, 90% of the people that I talk to say Racino. What is stopping that over at the Capitol? Now, people, when you think of this, and granted, you know, some people say, don't feed the beast. You know, and I think, for 20 years I've walked in and out of this Capitol just about every day. And we got the roofs hanging over because the rocks are falling off of the Capitol. And somebody is telling me, don't feed the beast, we don't need any money. I don't buy that argument. Never have and I never will. But also, on the other hand of it, you know what? What is fairness in the state of Minnesota? Isn't there a fairness issue? Isn't competitiveness good? Why would we have 18 places where you can gamble that are called casinos in Minnesota that make $1.4 billion net profit, pay no corporate taxes, no property taxes? We collect $19 million in sales taxes on liquor, lodging, tobacco, and gas, and we send $18 million back to them. Now, what's competitive about that? My good people in Minnesota are sitting out here and they're saying, what is going on up there? What is going on at the Capitol? This is a fairness issue. Now, you all know and I know, somebody says expansion of gambling. Well, isn't this news to me? In 1997, we had 4,000 machines. We now got 25,000 machines. And tonight, a semi could be at any back door unloading another 100. And nobody says a word about that. We have lottery in each one of your districts. In my district, I sold $8 million worth of lottery tickets every year. Granted, some people didn't like it because the mother would be picking out all of her children's birth dates and everything, and while you're trying to get gas, you had to wait a little while. But, you know, with lottery tickets, we have our charitable gambling, which is wonderful. I'm glad that charitable gambling bill got out of here. And the communities that I always represented for 19 years, that was a great issue also. So what is with the competitiveness? And when somebody says, talks to me, okay, we now have a governor. We now have a governor. God bless Governor Dayton for saying Racino the four times in the last month the first time ever that somebody says for early childhood or education or jobs, which the good representative Gunther has brought to your community for jobs. In Texas, it's $480 million they have in a pot. You wonder why New Ulm just transferred over that way? Don't we want to save Hutchinson Technology from moving and we have a little pot of money that we can give them? But isn't it only right? Isn't it fairness to compete in this world? We signed a compact with the Native Americans that said they don't have to pay any taxes. We do not want any of their taxes. We will pay our fair share of taxes at two Racinos to the state of Minnesota and compete. If we can't compete, so be it. But why couldn't we at least try? Why would anybody say, no, we have 18 casinos, they have 25,000 machines now, we have Mystic Lake that is second largest casino in the United States, second to Foxwoods in Connecticut. You know what they pay Connecticut? $301 million a year. We sit in the state, we're just saying, no, we don't want to get into that argument. Why don't we want to get into that argument? You guys can all answer that question. I can't answer the question because the life of me, I've been around this state for the last 5 years talking to group after group after group. And they say, Dick, this is a no-brainer. People tell me, well, there's going to be somebody get rich at Canterbury. It's publicly held. You all can buy as much stock as you want. I think they'd probably like it. It's got 3,000 or 4,000 owners. How am I paid to do this? I left my Senate seat to do this. Totally horse people. No gamblers. I've been to Mystic Lake once in my life. I'm not even a gambler, but I do like horse racing. And I do like when you go out to Canterbury, it's fun. There'll be a big crowd out there for the running of the Kentucky Derby, and they'll be betting. They're not bad people. St. Cloud study, 92% of everybody in the state of Minnesota in 2009 bet on something. Maybe they were bingo in the bingo parlor. I happen to be Catholic. My mother was gambling in 1948 and 50 when I was a little kid. Took me along, played six cards in the basement of the St. Francis Catholic Church in Rochester, Minnesota. Come on. Come on. Let's get with it, people. Don't be held up by 43 lobbyists at the Capitol. Please don't. You just can't let this happen. This state is out of money. We're not saying to put it into the general fund. But please use it to restore the capital. Please do it to buy some books, early childhood. But the biggest thing is jobs. What will it do to get $200 million in jobs? You take it from there. You all can sit here and you can pick out your projects and jobs. And what will you get? You'll get, now you got some revenue. Because now you're putting people to work. And now you're putting the things that make this state great, like it always has been. So I didn't say I would talk long, but go through the polls. The governor is with us. We've got bipartisan support. People are sitting out here saying, what's going on? I get 1,000 emails a week. I can't walk any place in this state, and everybody walks up to me, and they say, Dick, what's happening at the Capitol? I said, there's a lot of politics going on at the Capitol, guys. A lot of politics. A lot of money flowing around. A lot of money flowing around. Probably 18 to 20-some million in the last 8 years has went into parties and whatever. And trust me, it's not Republicans or Democrats. We also have the Republican Party, which I was a part of. They say, we can't, you know, gambling is bad.
Representative Phil has a question.
Please, you know, they got to tell that message out to the general public. Because I'm going to tell you what, if you want to go and shut down gambling in the state of Minnesota, do it. Have a press conference and just do it. But this whole bit about...
Okay, Representative Dill,
I've done my time.
2 minutes have passed.
2 minutes, okay.
Representative Dill?
There was a zero.
Mr. Chairman, I think... Senator Day ought to move to the Iron Range because he's got the kind of passion that I hear coming from the range delegation from time to time. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, for recognizing me. I had a question, Senator Day. You mentioned, I've been to Foxwoods and I've been down to Mystic Lake, and that seems to be a mischaracterization of the size of the casinos. I mean, Foxwoods is, I mean, I'm not saying that Mystic Lake isn't significant, but in going to Foxwoods, that's like over the top. But so how did you come to that conclusion?
I went by the gaming magazine that says that there are, I don't know, 5,000 machines, more slot machines than any place in Atlantic City, more in any place in Las Vegas. And if they want to dispute that, have at it, and when they come to the table, you can surely ask them that.
Okay, Mr. Chairman. So I want to zero in on that a little more.
Yeah.
You're saying that at Mystic Lake there are more slot machines than there are at Foxwoods.
No. Foxwoods has more.
Oh, Foxwoods.
Second to Foxwoods only. They have more than any other.
Okay. I wanted to just check on that. And then I had a comment about what Representative Moline brought up and what Representative Mullery talked about. You know, I wasn't here when the Greater Minnesota Fund was created. But I recall that then later became something that was taken to solve other problems. And I'm asking this question of the chair. And I think I know the answer, but I just want to make sure. I think Representative Mullery hit it, that the legislature could at some time reverse the futures fund and basically divert this all to the general fund.
Representative Dale, the only person who was here when that was created is Representative Clark, and it was before me. However, it's my understanding that the original was earmarked for economic development, and there were a few social things that went awry, and they changed it to the environment, and that's where it changed. As far as Iowa's concerned, somebody mentioned Iowa. Iowa just adopted $55 million more. They already used all of the lottery money, which was substantially more than that. And you get your question.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I think that it could be diverted. I don't want to say that the environment wasn't a worthy thing that the Greater Minnesota was used to work on. And I'm not saying that if this were diverted that it wouldn't be done in a worthy fashion. But I want to comment on something regarding what Representative Mahoney said. I actually support him in everything that he said. Because up on the Iron Range, we've been really blessed with the fund that this committee and the legislature is really familiar with, and that's the Doug Johnson Fund for Economic Development. And I'm only envisioning that if we could find a source, whether it be Racino or some other source, that could generate that kind of money for economic development, the kind of money that the Racino proponents have suggested will come from this, it could be significant for the state. And I just want to throw out some numbers again for those people in the audience and for those people who are not knowledgeable of this. But on the Iron Range, where we are blessed to have a fund similar to what is proposed, the Minnesota Futures Fund, over many decades we've accumulated a pittance compared to what this proposal could accumulate into a corpus, and it's about $120 million. Many decades, we've averaged about $4 million a year over many decades to get that kind of a corpus. But in the last 10 years alone, the agency and the governors that control the spending of that money, we have spent, when I say we, because I have served as the chair of that board and also as a member since elected in 2002, $4.5 million a year on economic development, or $45 million since 2002. And for that very small investment compared to what this proposal would raise as proposed, or another competing proposal that might raise a similar amount of money, we've created 4,580 jobs over the last 10 years with that, and we've leveraged over $310 million of private investment. Now, that's pretty significant. But even at that, we still lost up there almost 20,000 people in the last 10 years. So the need for this, not the need for an investment fund like you're creating in the bill, is absolutely critical to the state's success, as I think what Representative Mahoney was saying, that we need money for economic development, and we need it soon, and we need to do good work with it. Now, you know, if it's Racino that does that, then it is. If it's some other innovative idea, then that should be it. But we have on the Iron Range living proof that a fund run that is run well can produce significant impact. And that was my comment about the Minnesota Futures Fund.
Thank you. Representative Mahoney.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think he's got an amendment for my for the next bill that I try to present to the committee, so because we can do another fund. But here's my question. my question is either for yourself or for Mr. Day. Senator or former Senator Day commented that it was a bipartisan bill. I'm looking at it, and I don't see any Democrats on it. It's got and others. So, Mr. Chair or Mr. Day, could you tell me what Democrat has signed on to the bill? Because I don't see.
I know my guy Corey Kath, of course, has. I don't know. I think maybe David Dill has. Representative Dill maybe has. I will tell you that last year it was carried by Dan Sparks in the Senate and Al Junkie in the House. It was two Democrats that carried the bill last year and did a really great job of it. Al Junkie got it all the way through the House committee. And so it's been bipartisan, and it has to be. That's the only way it's ever going to get done if it's bipartisan. The money is bipartisan. The money is for the state. So
thank you.
Members, I'd love to ask, let you answer questions, but we got National Day of Prayer at 12. We have the opposing side that wants to have their
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I'm out of here. I want members to know, please realize that this is the only state in the United States that doesn't receive money from 18 casinos. They do it in jobs. But I went to 9 casinos from Iowa and all over. And if you walk into them, outside of them, and they all have Native American casinos, they have racetracks, they have riverboats, they have everything.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman.
I'd like to hear about how the Minnesota Lottery fits in with this bill.
I would be glad to have former Senator Day tell us that in a minute.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, the lottery actually would be in control of it. And the reason that we feel the lottery should be in control of it is because they actually are in control of most of the gambling that's in the state of Minnesota in some form or fashion, and they have the wherewithal, and we do have dollars in the bill that would help them have more workers to help, but they also would be the purchasers of the machines and would own actually the slot machines.
Okay, thank you.
We have.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I have to respond to Senator Day said very briefly.
Okay.
Mr. All right, thank you for that indulgence. Senator Day said that I think he said that I had signed on the bill. I have not signed on the bill. However, I have said repeatedly for a number of years that I would support Canterbury with a Racino.
I will.
And I have an amendment, as the members know, the 0378 amendment that I intended to present on the bill almost immediately that would limit this bill strictly to the existing Class A tracks in the state of Minnesota, and that I would support, but not a statewide proposal.
Mr. Chairman.
We're going to hear amendments pretty soon. Now, right now, we're going to have Jeremy Esteson and Jeff Hilgers representing the horsemen and for both tracks. Could you both come up same time? And you have 1 minute apiece. I have to be somewhat fair about this.
Well, Mr. Chair, members, we just thank you for the opportunity to be in front of you here today supporting Racino. Jeremy Esteson with Leonard Street and Dynard here representing the Minnesota Harness Racing Association, and these are the standard bred horses that run at Running Aces. With me today to explain the support some more is Josh Banks, who's a board member of the Harness Association.
I know you're going to be quick, Josh.
You bet. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. Real quick, as a board member for the MHRI, which is Minnesota Harness Racing Incorporated, our number one stance, the thing we're looking at a lot with this, the help of the Racinos, is we would like to develop more county fair racing like we have had over the past hundreds of years in the state. We used to race at approximately 15 different county fairs. We're down to 3. with the money that can be generated from the racinos, we as an organization can help the counties get their county fair programs up, help them build racetracks. Barnum is one example. Small little county fair up there. They've got a little half-mile track for us to race on, but the track needs work. They don't have the money to do it. Us as an organization will pay them, which therefore is going to create jobs right in Barnum, and we'll go up there and race whenever they'd like to have us.
Very well.
And that's, you know, statewide. We used to race in Rochester, Faribault, Owatonna, and we'd love to get back into all those other places also.
Now we'll hear about the other horses. Mr. Hills, thank you for coming.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is, and committee members, my name is Jeff Ilger. I've been a thoroughbred breeder for 21 years in Minnesota. I've had the honor of being the top breeder several times. I think I can explain to you the best I can why this is so important to us, because I've been listening all morning about jobs and people going out of work. Well, the horse industry in Minnesota is about to go under. I'm a good example. I had 52 horses 4 years ago. I now have 12. I had 14 broodmare. I'm down to 3. Because everything I do is a 3-year projection. I breed a mare. She has a year before she has a baby. It's 2 years before I can run it, or 3, to ever recover my investment. Listening to what I hear people say every day, it's hard to make an investment in the future. So what I've done is, I don't know if we're going to be able to show this chart or not. I ran charts of the foal count in Minnesota, and I'll briefly go through it. You got to give me more than a minute. This, we're the ones losing
minute
jobs.
And a half.
Basically, okay. In 1982, by a vote of 66 yes, 34% no, pari-mutuel gambling was brought about in the state of Minnesota. Immediately, people went out and spent millions of dollars on farms, tractors, farm equipment, agriculture, horses, to prepare for this track. If you look at the first foal count starting in 1988, which would be the largest, that's 1,000 foals that year. So just remember, that was planned on a year before. We finally got the foals. Now a few things happened, like the legs kicked out from underneath us. We now have state lottery. That's going to take some of the gambling out of there. It's natural. We have the monopoly, or excuse me, Native American business coming in. And you watch the slope go down and down and down. Till when you get about 4 inches over, you come to the point where Canterbury Park closed. That's the foal count, that little blue line on the bottom. That's how many foals. We've gone from 1,000 down to roughly 100. And that's only because those were projected 2 years back. You figure out which horse you're going to breed to. You breed to it, so you can't move immediately. Then the track was reopened. The track closed. I mean, we're broke. We're done. After millions of dollars were put into farms. The track came back in 1995. I'm getting old. And if you look at the graph on the bottom, you're going to see it go level for a couple of years. We were fighting. We were struggling because we had, I'm not going to lie, too much competition. We didn't have it when we spent the $1 million before, what we do now. So we came back to the legislature, and thank God they came to our rescue. They gave us a card club, and you can see exactly when the card club opened, and you can see the full carts start going up again. The reason it goes up, you're willing to make that investment in the future. Now we get up to 2006, and all of a sudden, what's going on here? It's starting to go back down again. Every state that has racehorse racing around us has a racino. The purses are higher than us. So I want to go to the next slide. The next slide shows you, over the same period of time, the purse structure. Again, very high when it was out there. Match the foals. The foals match it. You watch it go down to the, unfortunately, inch and a half in the middle where we're closed. We come back in. That's a purse structure. We get the card club. The horse breeders start having confidence in our state again. And it starts going back up. starts going back down. Why is it going back down? We can't draw the horses. We can't draw the trainers. We can't get the simulcast revenue because our races can't sell because we are not, I hate to say it, a Class A track. Everything else is Class A. I've gone to a lot of tracks in this country. This is the finest facility of any of them. There's nobody better. So we have the material. We have the things to go with. Next slide, please.
Mr. Hilsers, we got time to sum up, please.
Okay. I think this graph shows you exactly. On the left-hand side is the full count. Right-hand side is purses. If there's any question by anybody, are the fulls tied to purse structure? Take a look at the graph. You can lay them over each other. They're identical. Next slide. Racino's improved breeding industry. These are six states that have put racinos in. This is the foal count. If you look at the line coming down at the bottom of the peak, that's when they started their racinos. Every single one of them. The foal count went up. Every single one. Why? Because the purses went up. All right. This is the thing that you all should be very interested in. The cost of raising a racehorse. What I did is I went back to my own farm and I went through my own books. I took one horse, one baby, bred the mare. This is the cost for the first year, $5,475. The second year, it actually ends up going out to $30,255 I will have in that horse before I race it. Now, where'd all that money go? Where'd all that 35? That's just one horse. Now, if we go back to 1,000 foal, that's $35 million. One crop, $35 million in this state.
Mr. Hilders, you're a good friend, but thank you very much for your presentation.
Look at the math page. These are the people that are jobs.
Right here. Look at the pages. Now we have Karen Driver, chairwoman of the Fond du Lac Band of the Native Americans in Cloquet, Minnesota. Please come to the testifying table. Welcome. And
thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I would beg you to be fairly quick, please. Although we will allow more time when the bill is heard for the side that is against the Racino bill.
I will be brief. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Karen Diver. I am the chairwoman and CEO of the Fond du Lac Band of Lake Superior Chippewa, a northern tribe. I had the good fortune to host Speaker Kurt Zellers and Chairman Joe Hoppe to the reservation. I was glad to have them come into my community and see what our tribe has been able to do. The first words out of his mouth were to thank me for being an employer in Minnesota. And we employ nearly 2,200 employees in Carlton County, Minnesota. But with that, along with our employment base in Duluth, we are the second largest employer in all of northeastern Minnesota. The second largest employer in all of northeastern Minnesota. In a rural community, we draw from 16 different zip codes in our employment base. We are not a wealthy tribe. We live within a budget, or else we would go broke. There is this perception that is being pushed that gaming is unlimited wealth and that pie will continue to grow. We know just from within our own industry that this market is saturated and that pie will not get bigger. It will just get bigger. It will just get cut into smaller pieces. So yes, Representative Clark, there will be diminishment in Indian country. We know that gamers go to other facilities and that we share a client base with each other. The pie will be cut smaller. We use our funds locally to leverage grant money from the state and federal government. That would be diminished in a multiplier effect. We self-fund programs that the feds will tell you themselves are not adequately funded. But we also understand our role in the local economy and our obligation to the community, both tribal and non-tribal. Half of our employees are Native and half are not. We still have fully employer-paid health care coverage. Our benefit package alone costs us $16 per hour per employee. when the recession hit, we knew any small retraction in employment on the part of the band would be devastating to a small rural economy. We waited it through. I can't tell you as CEO that I would continue to do that and have the ability to, but a 10% cut in payroll would have been devastating to Cloquet and Carleton. $65 million in payroll, $110 million a year in annual distributions of income. Don't have those numbers. That's not net profit. We are labor-intensive businesses. We fund programs and services to our community. We're a tribe of 4,400, and gaming serves as our surrogate tax base. And with all due respect to those individuals who've talked about the different mechanisms for economic development, those have not been brought into bear in Indian Country. Everything that we've been able to do, we've done ourselves with self-determination and using gaming income to do it. We would otherwise be left behind. None of these funds get used in any great way in Indian Country. We are happy to be a part of the solution to the economic troubles in Minnesota by being large employers and by continuing to invest and seek out economic development proposals. But we would ask that you not be swayed by the rhetoric that this is unlimited income and would not hurt outstate Minnesota. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Chris, you have a question?
Yes, Mr. Chair, you, and thanks for coming and talking with us today.
Thank you.
Talked about the market being saturated. Do you support a cap on slot machines in the state?
I
will say this to you. We did a major investment in Black Bear Casino a couple of years ago. I will not tell you that that has had any impact on our revenues whatsoever. It did increase expense, and it created a lot more jobs. It didn't necessarily create more revenue.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Dale.
I don't have a question, but the chairman and CEO has talked about Indian Country, and so that's a little broader than just this band. And I wanted to say that her statement isn't uncategorically correct, is that in the Iron Range, her tribe does not happen to live within the Taconite, or their operations are not within the Taconite Relief Area. And that at the Iron Range Resources and Rehabilitation Board, we have worked very closely with the Ojibwe Nation at Grand Portage and at Boys Fort to assist them with economic development dollars that have come from an economic fund, the Doug Johnson, and also the Taconite Economic Protection Fund that is also a part of the Iron Range Resources. So I just wanted to make that clarification that Indian Country is a little broader term than just their band.
Thank you.
And we are in the Taconite tax area, by the way. The north end of the reservation is.
Yeah, okay, a part of it.
Next we have Marge Anderson, Angela Hikes, Stephen Hallern, and Rob Sawyer, all coming up at once. That's what you call being efficient. Got enough chairs there, okay. Would you give your name for the record and can start with your testimony?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Marge Anderson. I'm the chief executive of the Black Band of Ojibwe. When I was a little girl, I remember being spit at because I was Indian. I was made fun of because of my raggedy clothes. And I remember a teacher who told me, shame on you, over and over again. It wasn't for misbehavior. I think it was because I was too Indian to know how to be like other kids. The Mille Lacs Band elders tell stories like mine, but somehow we kept the will to be ourselves. Poverty is all we knew. Ojibwe culture was the only experience we had to hold on to. The only things that people had that other people wanted were our handmade baskets, hand-picked berries that we sold on the roadside. Even that privilege was ultimately taken away. After generations of poverty, we finally got a chance to start chipping away at it when Congress passed the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act 1988. A year later, we signed compacts with the state of Minnesota. We opened our two casinos in 91 and 92. We were so happy to finally see a ray of hope for our people and neighbors who desperately needed jobs. But it wasn't long before our happiness was joined by fear that it would be taken away. Every year we have this fear that the state of Minnesota will expand gaming. We worry because that's always been our history. Mm-hmm. Anytime our people have something of value, others want it. Mille Lacs Band opposes expansion of gaming. It would be harmful to our band members, employees, and neighbors. We continue to have poverty on the reservation. The effects of poverty will likely linger for decades. But we have made significant progress because of how we have utilized our gaming revenues. We continue to make progress in making needs as long as we have the resources to do so. The Mille Lacs Band has chosen the use of its gaming revenues to provide jobs, invest in economic development, build community infrastructure, and provide programs and services to band members. In order to do these things, the Mille Lacs Band government taxes Grand Casino revenues at 100%. Just like lottery revenues are reserved for the state use, our gaming revenues are reserved for band use. This is exactly what the state of Minnesota intended when it chose to allow Indian gaming. State leaders charge us with creating jobs and boosting the economy in greater Minnesota. We've done exactly that. I urge you to not make a move that would harm us, the very people that Indian gaming was originally designed to help. Angela Hackes will now tell you more about the economic impact of Grand Casinos and how gaming expansion will affect our businesses and region. Have much more detail to provide about how the tribal government puts gaming revenues to good use. You can read that about that in my written testimony that I will submit to you today. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Who's next?
Mr. Chairman, I'll be next. Chairman Gunther and members of the committee, my name is Angela Hykus, and I'm the Commissioner of Corporate Affairs for the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe. The Corporate Commission is responsible for the operations of Grand Casino Hinckley and Grand Casino Mille Lacs. We're talking about jobs here today, and our two facilities combined employ over 3,000 people, and 93% of those employees live in the rural Minnesota counties that surround each of our facilities. It's a significant number of jobs, and it's a significant number of steady jobs that are held by almost 90% not Indians, and they're full-time jobs that carry full benefits, which include health care, 401k, and time off benefits. Steady jobs like the ones that I'm describing were in extreme short supply in rural Minnesota before our casinos came to those areas. We have grown jobs in Mille Lacs County by 35%, and we've grown jobs in Pine County by 70%. These are steady, reliable jobs and jobs that are provided by trusted, successful businesses. These jobs are results of economic development that was brought to our region over 20 years ago, and I just want you to know that that need has not gone away today. In addition to providing jobs in our region, Grand Casinos generates a significant amount of local commerce. We purchase nearly 70% of our goods and services from Minnesota companies, and of that 70%, 48% are from companies that are located outside of the Twin Cities metropolitan area. The band is the largest taxpayer in Pine County, and we're the second largest taxpayer in Mille Lacs County. And since we've opened, we've paid $91.9 million worth of taxes, federal and state taxes, to wages that we've paid to our employees. Rural Minnesota, as a result, has been the beneficiary of really the positive ripple effect that the economies in those areas have had because of our casinos. You may first believe that, given the location of our facilities, that expansion of gaming within the Twin Cities metropolitan area is not going to be impactful to us, but that is not the case, and I'm going to describe to you a few reasons why that's not the case. It's not the case because the Twin Cities metropolitan area is a key market for each of our facilities. We derive over 45% of our gaming traffic and business from the Twin Cities metropolitan area. And I'm sure as many of you know, the seven-county metro area is where approximately 54% of Minnesota adults live. In other words, what's being talked about here is the heart of the gaming market that we serve, is the heart of the gaming market for the proposed new facilities. Casinos at the state's horse track, and really anywhere, downtown Minneapolis, a casino in that particular area, is going to have significant negative impact on the revenue that we are able to generate. We hear a lot, and we heard it again here today, that Grand Casinos doesn't want to compete. We don't want a level playing field. But I'm here to tell you that we already compete, and competition is not the issue. As with many businesses, location is really the key to the success of a business, and location has critical influence on where someone chooses to take their business. Where we're hindered in Indian country is that we are required to have our facilities located on land that is held in federal trust for our tribe. Privately owned casinos, state-owned casinos, however, can choose to be located anywhere. And the natural choice is for them to locate within the population center. I think that alone certainly will attract more visitors, and alone gives them a competitive advantage, and it's a competitive advantage that we cannot overcome. Further, in addition to talking about where the facility is located, the fact that the Twin Cities are a key market area, the market is mature. Gaming has been going on in the state of Minnesota for a long time. People that are choosing to game are gaming today. So as you put more facilities into the market, what it's going to do, it's going to shift gamers rather than attract new gamers. And that shift is going to take the benefit away from where those gamers are going today and away from our rural casinos and our rural communities. Depending on the nature of expansion, really the size of what those facilities look like, we've made some projections that it could impact us up to 40%. We as a business are going to have to respond. We're going to have fewer guests coming to us, lower revenues. We're going to have to change our operating cost model because we're going to need to compete. So as we respond, it's going to mean fewer employees, fewer jobs, fewer people that have access to health care, fewer purchases that we make with vendors. Less ability for economic development in the region, harm to those local businesses that count on the casino visitation and also employee traffic in those communities. People in East Central Minnesota are going to be impacted, and there's going to be serious financial implications. Their need for state assistance because they no longer have jobs or no longer have health care is a reality. And the negative impacts in our rural regions are going to offset some of the projections that are being made about what the benefits are. And it's going to continue to burden the state's current stretched resources. There is a lot of talk about the benefits of expansion of gaming in the Racino bill, but I'm just hopeful that you consider really all of the negative consequences that are going to come along with that. One of the questions that I really think we're talking about is how does the transfer of jobs out of our rural communities into the metro area really constitute any net gain for the state of Minnesota? And also, what other economic development opportunity are we going to be able to create in East Central Minnesota that's going to be able to recreate the job loss that's going to occur? Our issue with Racino's is rather than create new jobs, it's going to shift jobs. And the losers are not only going to be the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe. It's going to be every citizen today that is benefiting from that economic development that's come to those communities. The Mille Lacs Band strongly opposes gaming expansion for the reasons of job loss and really far and wide-reaching economic damage that it will do to the region. I also have some more information, written testimony, if you would like to read that. But I just thank you for your time today, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee.
Thank you. If the next two could talk quickly, we have about four more people that would like to talk.
Okay.
Your name for the record and give your testimony.
My name is Robbie Sawyer, Chairman Gunther, members of the committee. My name is Robbie Sawyer. I am a 15-year associate of Grand Casino Hinckley and currently a manager in the marketing department. My story is one of many in which people have found opportunity because of Grand Casinos. 3,000 employees, countless business owners, and the residents of East Central Minnesota have all benefited from the economic impact that surrounds Grand Casinos. I'm also a lifelong resident of East Central Minnesota. I grew up in Moose Lake, 30 minutes north of Hinckley. I started working at Grand Casino in 1996, and I found nothing but opportunity since. On two separate occasions, Grand Casino has adjusted my work schedules, provided me tuition reimbursement, also I could earn an associate's and bachelor's degree. Over the past 15 years, I've worked hard, and I've been promoted several times within the organization. Opportunities like the ones I've had at Grand Casino are rare in our region. Most businesses in the area do not provide the quality of benefits that Grand Casino does. Besides myself, my wife is also an associate of Grand Casino. We know as well as anyone how critical the casino's well-being is to families in East Central Minnesota. Any job losses in my family would force us to move away from our family, away from our friends, just to find a comparable job. It is difficult to understand why our existing jobs would be less important than proposed new jobs in the Twin Cities. Why would put precious jobs in East Central Minnesota in jeopardy? Today, I am urging you to strongly consider the thousands of jobs, like mine, that gaming expansion would endanger. Thank you.
Thank you. Give your name for the record, please.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Stephen Holland. I'm a county commissioner in Pine County. I'm going to just briefly outline the impact and talk about Pine County. Pine County is home to the Grand Casino Hinckley. In our rural part of the state, jobs and a prosperous economy are very important. They're very hard to come by. We don't take these kind of things for granted. We work very hard at it. It's a tough area of the state to have economic development. We're very fortunate that the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe have been as successful as they are. The Grand Casino in Hinckley is by far the largest employer in Pine County. Matter of fact, 1,109 people that work at that facility are Pine County residents. We only have 29,000 people in our county. It's significant. It's huge. The Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe, the band's corporate commission, and the Grand Casino Hinckley are also our largest property taxpayers. In 2010, they paid $1,118,884 in property tax. We only collect about $12 million. So roughly 10% of our tax base is paid for by the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe. In addition, 72 small vendors in Pine County offer their services to the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe. This is the snow plowing contract, the lawn mowing contract, the hauling the trash contract, kinds of things that people can do to make a living. We recognize that the Grand Casino Hinckley plays a vital role in our economy and tourism and contributes significantly to local infrastructures and to charitable causes. We also recognize that the Grand Casino's revenue have helped position the Mille Lacs Band to improve its reservation and the lives of its band members and members of the non-band in Pine County. And on behalf of the Pine County Board, I respectfully urge you and this committee and the Minnesota legislature to reject the gambling expansion. People in the economy of Pine County rely on the Grand Casino Hinckley to play a major role in our continued success. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony. Any questions for these testifiers?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For any of the testifiers, I'm just wondering, have you added any slots on at your location in the last 5 or 10 years?
In our facilities recently, we've been impacted, I think, like any business, from the economic downturn and the recession. We have added some games, but really, from a business perspective, we've been impacted, and I think it's been talked about before in terms of where our revenues have been.
Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Murray.
Would your expansion, though, of gambling at your casino not be hurting other casinos by pulling more away from them?
Well, I think that, you know, one of the things that we certainly look at in our, you know, in our market in terms of what the demand is that we're currently taking and what we can take care of. And, you know, your question about over the last 5 years, the growth in our operations has not been significant. The footprint of our operations today looks very similar.
Thank you.
Representative Clark.
Just a short request, I think, for maybe for some future analysis. I appreciate the testimony about the especially from the chairwoman, also from the previous testimony, about people coming out of poverty. And I'm just wondering if you could at some point document the savings to the state by people becoming more self-supporting and not having to rely on some of the public assistance that's been out there in the past. So if you could provide that to us, or if you have it right now, that's fine, but if not, that cost-benefit analysis would be very helpful.
Mr. Hermanson? Anybody? Thank you very much for coming. Appreciate your testimony. Mr. Hermanson? From Prairie's Edge Casino in Granite Falls. Welcome to our committee. Give your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. My name is Richard Hermanson. I'm 47 years old. I live in a small west central town of Boyd, Minnesota. I work at Prairie's Edge Casino Resort in Granite Falls under the authority of the Upper Sioux community, which is 23 miles east from where I live. I have worked there now for the Upper Sioux community for going on 18 years in the Surveillance and Investigations Department. I have physical disabilities that prevent me from working at most places. And back in 1993, then Firefly Creek Casino, they took me under their wings, and I have been there ever since. They have always treated me with the utmost respect and fairness, and have given me the opportunities for advancement within the surveillance department, along with accommodating me with my disability. With the introduction of this casino and expansion of gaming, to me, is nothing short of some strong-arm tactics by some officials to again take over something that we as a country gave to the Native Americans, which they have earned and they deserve. The initiation of casinos and casino expansions would greatly impact us in rural Minnesota, economically and medically, with regards to the medical insurance packages we currently have in place at Prairie's Edge Casino. This is just to name a couple of the areas. Prairie's Edge Casino Resort is the biggest employer in our area, and the introduction of any casinos and expansion of any gaming would take dollars away from all the people in this area. Other Native American run casinos, the dollars from employees, the towns, and Native American communities. This type of expansion doesn't work. It hasn't for many of the other states that have tried it. They have failed. The only thing it does is take dollars away from Native American communities, the businesses in and around the area, and the employees that work at their casinos. To me, that's an outrage.
Hermanson, we have to cut off at midnight, or at noon, excuse me.
Okay, yeah.
Seems like midnight.
It does.
For National Day. I got four lines left.
We'll make it very quick because you're cutting into God's time.
I hear you. The expansion would affect people's jobs, their livelihood, and neighboring businesses. I know I personally can't afford to try and get another job with the same financial effects and with the same associated benefits package that I currently have. I know that I am not alone in saying that. You have to oppose this bill. Otherwise, you will be affecting thousands and thousands of people negatively, and it will turn some people's lives upside down, and for some of these people, it would be to the point of no recovery, including myself. Thank you, committee members and Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. I want to remind everybody there will be time for testimony when the bill is officially being heard, and those people that didn't get to have their time at the testifying table will have one later. And we took the people as they were, came to our committee administrator. So we tried to be as fair and open about this process as we could. So with that, we are adjourned. Thank you very much.